After last night's head-to-head against SmackDown, we are back here again on YouTube covering it all for you again. I got a podcast to get ready for in the morning. Oh, one right after the other, right? But it's all fun. It's all fun. All of us here are here because we're wrestling fans, so that's what we want to do. Want to hear about wrestling, talk about wrestling, watch wrestling. We had a classic last night. Talk about great wrestling. We had a classic last night between Bryan Danielson and Minoru Suzuki. And a great battle between CM Punk and Matt Sydal. That was last night. Tonight, Punk was on commentary, and Bryan was back in the ring. He was back in the ring for the main event, one-on-one against Bobby Fish. What I thought was a very good match. We also had an excellent, fiery babyface promo from Hangman Adam Page. It is official. We already knew it, but they made it official tonight. It will be Hangman challenging Kenny Omega for the AEW World Championship at Full Gear next month. He came out and cut the best promo I've ever heard him cut. He had conviction in his voice. He looked in the camera. He said all the right things. He got you fired up to see him walk in there and win the AEW World title. He's the guy. Everything has been building to this. And I thought he delivered the promo that he needed to tonight on the show. We have new AAA Tag Team Champions. Although the title change was not exactly, I would not say... That was one of the better parts of the show tonight. And we have the bracket for the World Title Eliminator, the finals of which will take place at Full Gear. So I'm going to run down all of the matches that are in the opening round of the tournament. They flashed it on screen right at the very end of the show tonight. And so I'll do the same. At the end of the stream, we'll get into the bracket. I think the finals are pretty obvious, even if you ignore Tony Khan's little faux pas the other day where he sort of revealed the card inadvertently on his notepad, then you probably already have a sense of what the finals are probably going to be. We will cover all of it. Like and subscribe if you are not already a member of this channel. You can go ahead and hit that like button right now. I will be reading your super chats. That is what you see popping up on screen already. I will get to all of your messages. You'll see them flashing on screen. And one more quick plug here before we get into things, and that is you may have noticed on the channel a little bit earlier, we had some more content go up in the form of the Dark Side of the Ring. Latest Dark Side of the Ring review is here. It is here for your listening pleasure. The Many Faces of Luna Vachon. And this is the, I would say this is probably the second most anticipated episode for me. Of this season. And it was a very good episode. Very, very sad, obviously, if you know about Luna's story. Runs about half an hour. Went up on the YouTube channel a little bit earlier. I'll probably push the audio out in a couple of days. But if you don't want to wait that long, you don't have to. It's up on the channel, so when we're done here, you can go ahead and check that out. So we opened with Malakai Black. One-on-one against Dante Martin. Dante Martin, of course, is one of the great rising stars, rising young stars on the AEW roster. One of the youngest members, I think. He might be the youngest, actually, member of the AEW roster. And this was the biggest match of his career. Malakai Black, they have been handling him perfectly. Ever since he debuted, he's got the best entrance in the entire company. Love the Malakai Black entrance. The music, the presentation, the mask, everything about it is great. So Black countered a springboard early in the match into a powerbomb, and he locked on a single-leg crab. He forced Dante to the ropes for a rope break. Dante came back with a poison rana, hit a dive where at first he jumped up on the top rope hands-free and then did a cannonball dive out onto the ramp onto Malakai Black. So Dante ended up hitting a top rope hurricane rana. This was the big spot of the match. And took Black down right on his tailbone. Martin was selling the knee. He kept selling his knee like he had tweaked it. And he connected with the double jump moonsault. Still could not put Black away. Black rolled through into a single leg crab. Dante ended up trying for another dive. I mean, it's all he knows. He went for the same move multiple times here in this match. That springboard dive into the ring. Tried it again. Didn't work. Black avoided it, connected with the Black Mass, which I don't know if he has given it a name yet in AEW. I'm still calling it Black Mass. I think it's a great name. I don't know if that's the official name of the move, though, ever since he came over to AEW, but That's all she wrote. Kicked the kid right in the face. He took his sweet time before he finally dropped down, covered him 1-2-3. Easy win for, I won't say easy, but an obvious win for Malakai Black, right? You knew he was going to win the match. But I thought Dante Martin, for the time he was in there, every time we have seen him in a big match on Dynamite, on Rampage, whether it's Malakai Black, whether it's Powerhouse Hobbs or somebody else, he has looked good. And he looked good in this match tonight, but he came to the ring with Lio Rush in his corner because this is the new alliance here. Lio Rush is going to, he's going to show him the way. He is going to take him to heights that he has not yet reached. He's going to make him all that money, right? That's what Lio Rush is promising this kid. And when they showed Lio outside the ring when the match was over, he looked like a disappointed dad, which it kind of makes sense because, again, if you watch Dante in this match, he kept going back to the same move over and over and over again, and it did not pay off for him. So it kind of makes sense. A rookie mistake here by Dante Martin in this match. What I liked also was when the match was over, and Malakai Black is a heel, but when the match was over and he's walking out, he stopped on the ramp and he turned around and he made eye contact in the ring with Dante Martin. And the camera actually cut away from it too soon, but you briefly caught it before they cut away. Black gave him a nod out of respect. Kind of reminded me of when The Undertaker did that with Jeff Hardy after they had their ladder match on Raw many years ago. Even though Undertaker was the heel, he had respect for the effort that Jeff Hardy put in and almost beat him. He almost came very close to winning the championship in that ladder match, and he helped him to his feet, and he kind of looked at him. He paid respect. And that's what Malakai Black did here with Dante Martin. So the moral of the story here at the end of this match is Malakai Black is fantastic. And I am so happy to see him finally getting the chance to show what it is that he can do. And not just in the ring, but I mean just in terms of his character, in terms of, like I said, his entrance, right? Everything about the presentation of that Malakai Black character has been dead on so far in AEW. Whereas with Miro, for the first several months, you know, I don't know too many people who were impressed by what they had Miro doing, and then one day it just sort of clicked, and we got Miro the Destroyer, Miro the Redeemer. But really, from day one with Malakai, they've gotten it right. And I hope that continues. And now he's getting the chance to show that he can be a major player here in this promotion. I think after the Cody feud runs its course, and the Cody feud is continuing, we're getting part three of Cody and Malakai Black next weekend on Dynamite, because they're going to be back on Saturday again. But I was thinking, once we move beyond the Cody feud, and I would have to think that Cody is going to win that match. I said Malakai has to win match number two, and he did. Now they're going into match number three. I would be very surprised if Cody does not win that match. Pleasantly surprised if he doesn't, because that puts a lot of faith in Malakai Black for him to beat Cody Rhodes three times in a row. I don't see that happening, though. But when this has run its course, win or lose, I was looking at the roster and thinking, you know, who would be a good opponent for Malakai Black? Who would be a good sort of next program for him? And I think Malakai and Christian Cage, I think, would be a lot of fun. I think the two of them would have not just great matches, I just think the two of them would work well together. I have nothing to base that on because I've never seen them in the ring together. I don't see it happening now. Christian is the Impact World Champion. He's defending the Impact World title next weekend, actually, next Sunday at Bound for Glory against Josh Alexander. I think we're going to get a title change on that show. So if he drops the championship, that makes it a little bit easier for him to be in a program and lose on AEW television. Because if you'll notice, I don't think he's lost a single match on AEW TV since winning the Impact World title. He hasn't really been on AEW television hardly at all. I think he's going to drop the belt to Josh Alexander next weekend. And you know, maybe in the next couple of months, we'll see him transition into something with him. I mean, I'd like to see Malakai and Darby, but now is obviously not the right time with him feuding with MJF. And on the subject of Malakai Black, I thought that it was appropriate to mention this here because this person is one of his great adversaries from their time together in WWE. And I saw the news break during Dynamite tonight. I saw it on my timeline. Buddy Murphy, now going by the name Buddy Matthews, was just announced as making his New Japan Pro Wrestling debut next month in San Jose. They have a show out in California. It's on November 13th, which is the same night as Full Gear. But Buddy Matthews is going to make his New Japan debut. Good for him. He's another one. Like Malakai, never really had a chance to fully show what he can really do. They gave him a push, and then they sort of yanked it away from him, and he's another one. I'd like to see him go out there and show the world what he can do. I think him in a New Japan ring, I think he's going to kill it, and I look forward to seeing what he can deliver there. But when I saw that, I was happy for him, because I think that's going to be a good fit for him. And who knows? You know, remember, the door is open between the two companies, so if he's going to work for New Japan, we may yet be able to get a Buddy Matthews Malakai Black rematch at some point down the road. It could happen. Those two guys work well together every time they were in the ring. I wouldn't mind seeing that. Tony Schiavone was as busy as ever. This guy was all over this fucking show. In fact, he had great teleportation powers, which we'll get into in a little bit. But Tony Schiavone was in the back with Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, who was wearing this really spiffy-looking leather jacket. And Jungle Boy was talking. He gets cut off in mid-sentence by the Super Elite. Adam Cole, Young Bucks, Kenny Omega's there as well. I think I saw somebody mention that today was Kenny Omega's birthday, I believe. I don't know how old he is. I heard 39. Is that accurate? Is he 39 years old? Anyway, if it is his birthday, happy birthday, Kenny Omega. But Jungle Boy gets cut off mid-promo. The Young Bucks dropped him with a pair of super kicks, and the heels powerbombed Luchasaurus through a table. They kicked him in the balls, and then they powerbombed him through a table. And they left the Jurassic Express laying. That was the entire segment. We had the reunited Inner Circle out next for a promo. Reunited even though they never actually broke up. But they billed this as an Inner Circle reunion. They were reunited for the first time together on camera in the ring. Because Sammy's been off doing his thing. Jericho and Hager have been doing their thing. Santana and Ortiz haven't been doing much of anything, unfortunately. Santana spoke first. He was praising the Miami crowd and how loud they were here. Back-to-back nights. You guys are still as loud as you were last night. Ortiz started talking. He got cut off by American Top Team's music. Out comes Dan Lambert and his crew. 38. People are saying 38. Well, 38, 39, what's the fucking difference? Same shit. He's close to 40, but not quite. Happy birthday, Kenny Omega. Dan Lambert comes out. The boos rained down upon Dan Lambert. They showered this man with boos. And Jericho got the crowd to chant fat face dipshit at Mr. Lambert. Bulu Fatulu is joining us. There's Bulu. There he is. Sound off superstar for the past 2 months. Thanks for recommending the Ozarks. Hell of a show. Got that Breaking Bad vibe to it. Yeah, I think I've described it before as Breaking Bad is to meth, Ozark is to money laundering. That was the analogy that I used. I'm just waiting on the final season. It's coming. It's coming. So anyway, fat face dipshit chants erupt here in this building. Jericho is throwing some insults now at Paige Van Zandt, and I think her husband was there as well. And he suggested, you know, every time we see Paige Van Zandt, it's around the Inner Circle. I think you're obsessed with us. I think you're stalking us. And then he was talking about her sliding into his DMs as if. Then he got serious and he issued a challenge to all the American Top Team guys to a 10-man tag team match. And Lambert started talking again, and again the heat started all over again. He gets the Vicky Guerrero heat. You know, there was a time when Vicky was first really getting over as a heel in WWE. If she so much as opened her mouth, you couldn't even hear her speak. The boos in the building were so loud. That's the kind of heat that Dan Lambert gets. So Lambert says the men of the year have bigger plans that involve championship gold, and he insulted Jericho, he insulted Hager, he insulted Santana and Ortiz. He said, you know, Sammy, who he called Tiny Tim, said Sammy's the only one in the ring right now with championship gold. And he said that Sammy, I guess, is the only one who has the stroke to get them the tag match that they want. He would have a week to agree to their terms. And I was a little confused here. Because at first, and maybe I missed something in translation here, it sounded like he was saying that Sammy is the only one who could get them the tag team championship match that they want, even though the tag team champions are the Lucha Bros, have nothing to do with any of this. And that didn't really make a lot of sense. So I'm guessing what he actually was saying is that Sammy, as the only champion representing the inner circle, is the one who has the ability, I guess, to make this 10-man tag team match happen. And I guess next week he will announce what the terms are of that match, if I understood correctly, because the other way around didn't make a lot of sense. So I assume that's what he was saying. Scorpio Sky reminded us that he has pinned Chris Jericho twice in the past, and Sammy said he would kick all of their asses next week. So I like that Sammy continues to get great reactions from the crowd. I love seeing it. I think that he doesn't need to be doing the inner circle thing. I think I'd like to see him doing more stuff on his own away from the inner circle. But they need somebody to feud with Lambert's crew. And for all of the groups and the little trio factions they have in this company, in terms of big factions, you really have the Dark Order, the Inner Circle, and the Pinnacle. Right? I mean, the Elite, they're off doing their own thing. So they need the Inner Circle to work with and to really give them some wins. Like last night on Rampage, with Dos Santos and Paige and Scorpio Sky, they needed that win. The heels had to go over and get that win, and they did. So obviously they're going to continue this now, but I'd like to see Sammy defending that TNT title more on television. You know, he defended it against Bobby Fish under the guise that Fish was not even with the company, even though he was. I want to see him doing more of that, maybe more of an open challenge, more TNT title matches on TV, because I don't think he needs to be doing inner circle stuff anymore. You know, they could be loosely aligned, but kind of like Santana and Ortiz. They're still background players. I mean, they're not doing anything with them. And so I would like to see them on television more, mixing it up with people on TV each week. Same thing for Sammy. Hager, I really could care less about. Frankly, Jericho, at this point, I could really care less about. But Ortiz and Santana and Sammy, they deserve to be doing more. Speaking of the tag team champions, that leads into our next segment. We had the Lucha Bros, both the AEW and the AAA tag team champions, Rey Fénix and Penta, defending the AAA tag team titles against Andrade El Idolos, mystery masked tag team. That's all we were told, is that Andrade was bringing some friends. He was bringing friends to Dynamite this week, some masked friends, mystery men to challenge, not for the AEW, but for the AAA tag team titles. And there were, you know, a lot of people thinking that it would be some folks from AAA. They were kind of teasing it at the AAA show last week. I guess that was a bit of a swerve. Instead, what we got making their AEW debut was Las Super Ranas, translated to the Super Frogs. I think I played a game by that name on the my old Atari system when I was a kid. Super Frog, something like that. Maybe I'm thinking of Pitfall. I don't know. It's a stupid fucking name. CM Punk did not even attempt to pretend that it wasn't FTR under the masks. All you had to do is take a look at their bodies. They're pretty distinguishable just by their body types, who it is. So I don't know if Punk kind of blew the lid off this sooner than he was supposed to, because they started the match, and within the first, 45 seconds, Punk is on commentary saying, guys, that's FTR. So at that point, everybody on commentary had to basically acknowledge that it's FTR. And eventually, they did reveal that it was. Actually, Punk had a great line here. He goes, it's got to be FTR, because we haven't had a single flip. Here, I mean, this is a luchador tag team, not one flip. So very quickly, they ripped the masks off. It was Dax Harwood. It was Cash Wheeler, which we all knew anyway. During the break, Rey Fénix was isolated by both members of FTR. Penta sent both members of FTR out to the floor. And both Lucha Brothers did dives out onto each member of FTR. So back inside, Lucha Bros are setting up for a spike pile driver. Wheeler breaks it up. Penta lands a thrust kick on Wheeler out on the floor. Wheeler replies with a kind of a throw onto the timekeeper's table to Penta, so that takes care of Penta. Phoenix hits a spinning kick to Harwood in the ring that took him down, looked like a knockout shot. All of a sudden, here comes Tully Blanchard. He runs down to the ring to provide for the distraction. He's running interference here in this match. But while that's going on, Dax Harwood grabs one of the AAA tag team belts. Rey Fénix comes off the top rope. He comes flipping off the top rope. And as he's coming down, Harwood nails him right in the face with the championship. And he hits a brain buster. He gets the win. FTR are your new AAA tag team champions. Because when I think of the AAA tag team champions, I think of two people who look exactly like Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler. Now, I will say that as a fan of FTR and their work, I am happy to at least see them wearing gold of some kind. That's great. Good for them. I thought this was way too goofy. Way too goofy for, you know, a major tag team title change. The AAA tag team titles are supposed to be a big deal. And these two guys were out there looking like the second incarnation of the Toxic Turtles. They're out there looking like a bunch of fucking turtles in these costumes. May as well wore gold and called them Los Conquistadors. It played like a comedy angle. So it was a little too goofy for me. I mean, the action was good. It was nothing to go out of your way to see. This is building to something that'll be a lot better than what we got tonight. I actually thought this was one of the weaker parts of the show tonight. So then it was To the Back with Tony Schiavone. He should have his own YouTube show called To the Back with Tony Schiavone. Half an hour on YouTube every week. Now, what was weird about this is that they immediately sent it to the back, and Excalibur said, let's go to Tony Schiavone in the back. Tony Schiavone did commentary for the match that just ended. He didn't leave the announce booth. He was still there. And Excalibur is saying, let's go to Tony Schiavone in the back. You ever saw that movie? Because Michael Keaton was trending today. Because I saw the little teaser for that new Flash movie, I guess, that's coming out next year. It's still in production. But they had like a teaser trailer, and Michael Keaton did the narration, and we got a little glimpse of Michael Keaton in his old Batman costume. I guess the old Michael Keaton Batman is going to be in this new movie that's coming out, the Batman from 89, one of my favorite versions of Batman. But because Michael Keaton was trending, it made me think of this. There was a movie he did many years ago called Multiplicity, which was about a guy who ends up getting cloned. There's like three of him. So I'm thinking, this is what's going on here with Tony Schiavone. Apparently he has been cloned, and they have multiple Tony Schiavones. So at any given moment when they have to go to the back, or they have to go to the parking lot, or they have to go to the ring, they have to go to the staircase, because he was all over the place tonight. They have multiple Tony Schiavones all throughout the building. This guy's everywhere. What this was some poor quality control here on their part, because it was very fucking bizarre. Just the way they threw it to the back was just very strange. Either that or he's got some awesome teleportation powers. One or the other. He was in the back with Dante Martin and Leo Rush. And Rush said that Dante failed. It was his own fault. It was his own mistake. So he's trying to take Dante to new heights. From this day forward, he's going to have a new tag team partner. And the name of that new tag team partner is Leo Rush. So now Leo Rush is going to be tag team partners with Dante. Dante's brother, don't forget, is still out with a knee injury. I think he had ACL surgery. I don't remember how long ago the surgery was, so I don't know exactly when he is due back. But my first thought when I saw this is going to play out for a while. Maybe his brother is on his way back in the not-too-distant future. And this could be setting up an angle yet to come, where when Dante's brother, I keep forgetting his first name, the other Martin brother, is ready to come back, he'll show up on TV and you'll almost have this, you know, kind of struggle for who is going to be Dante's tag team partner. Maybe that's where the split happens, because what I really want to see is Dante Martin one-on-one against Leo Rush. I have more interest in that than I do seeing them as a tag team. So maybe they're going to wait until the brother is all healed. And then that will be the catalyst for the eventual split. This is my first thought. Darius, thank you. I always forget his first name. Darius and Dante Martin. Somebody look up when Darius had his surgery, because that'll give us a sense of when he's due back. It's been a while. Elsewhere, guess who interviewed FTR in a staircase in the building? Tony Schiavone. And they were trying to flee after their big title win. MJF finds them. He hugs them. He congratulates them. So here's Andrade. Now remember, this was Andrade's mystery team. So what does Andrade have to do with it? Because he didn't have any involvement in the match. He was out there, but he never really got involved. And Andrade hands MJF an envelope for the, quote, services of FTR. So Andrade used FTR. He used the Pinnacle. He paid him off to get one over on Penta and Phoenix. So that's the angle here. And they made it very clear this was a one-night-only payment. This is not some kind of joint alliance between these parties here. So I see the dead demon on my screen. Never forget. Never forget the dead demon. John Moxley against Wheeler Yuta. See, Cash Wheeler was not the only Wheeler on this show tonight. This went less than a minute. Moxley came through the crowd. He was not prancing around to his music. He looked like Renee just told him that she's pregnant for a second time. He had this look on his face like he was just pissed at the world. I'm sure he's very happy to be a father. I kid John Moxley. I'm sure he's very excited to be a dad. But yes, he was in a very foul mood, and Yuta got caught immediately by a lariat. Moxley hit a release vertical suplex, some ground and pound, and hit the paradigm shift for the win. I would say this went maybe 40 seconds, somewhere around there. Doc Samson, came into the ring when it was over, and Orange Cassidy. They got into the ring to check on Yuta. Yuta was doing a hell of a sell job here. I don't think he was hurt. But he was really selling it like he didn't know where he was. He got the wind knocked out of him. So this was just, I guess this was just some way of showing that John Moxley has a bit of a bad attitude going into the Eliminator tournament. He is in the tournament. I'm assuming that's what this was. It was to establish that he's just walking around in a very pissed off mood. He wants to be the AEW World Champion again. And nobody is going to stand in his way. So we go to the back. And guess who was there? Tony Schiavone. He was in the back with Serena Deeb. Asking her about her change in attitude last week. Speaking of attitude adjustments, she was back there talking about her actions when she attacked Hikaru Shida. After they had their match, when she denied Shida of her 50th win in AEW. And she started talking, and she almost sounded like maybe she had a cold or something. Her voice sounded weird, like maybe she was a little under the weather. But then she was very quickly interrupted by Shida, who threw her jacket at her. They started brawling, and immediately, they cut away. And that was kind of the story of the show tonight. Even though I thought overall this was an enjoyable episode of Dynamite, and they progressed stories heading into Full Gear, but again, a mile a minute, it was just like you didn't even have time to just recover from what you had just seen, and then boom, it was right into the next segment. And maybe that segment would only go 30 seconds, and then it would break down in a brawl, and then boom, right into the next one. They don't give you a chance to just slow down the pace just a little bit. You know, it would benefit from cutting one or two segments out of the show to give all the other segments on the show just a few extra seconds to just breathe a little bit. They didn't give you a chance to breathe on this show. But that next segment was the Super Elite, Adam Cole and the Young Bucks against the Dark Order, comprised of Evil Uno, Alex Reynolds, and John Silver. So the Super Click, they attacked before the bell. They went for an assisted powerbomb on the ramp. Silver reversed it. Reynolds took out everybody with a dive. Bell finally rings, and Dark Order is rocking and rolling here. They got some triple team offense going on. Silver gets cut off by a Matt Jackson super kick. Cole stopped a dive by Alex Reynolds with a kick before hitting the Ushigoroshi. It was a double suplex that allowed John Silver to get to Evil Uno for the hot tag. And the big spot here, Evil Uno pulled out a sock and he went for the mandible claw. He went for the Mr. Socko spot. Gimmick infringement on this show, but the crowd erupted. It got a huge reaction. So they were very happy to see him bust out the sock. Better to bust out the sock than bust in the sock, but in any event. Cole broke it up. Silver and Reynolds, they were mocking the Bucks. You know how they do the spot, the Super Elite, where Cole will have somebody in a camel clutch, and the Bucks hit the ropes back and forth, and then they give the kiss to Adam Cole, the kiss on the cheek. So they kind of mocked the Bucks, and it was the Dark Order instead who were coming in for the kiss on the cheek. But they sent Cole crashing onto the Bucks outside the ring. Evil Uno hit something evil for a near fall. But the Bucks broke up the pin. Yeah, Tuxedo, I meant to check Mick Foley's Twitter to see if he had said anything. I'm sure he was very flattered to see that spot on TV tonight. But I did not check his Twitter to see if he said anything about it. So share with me if Foley said anything, and I'll relay that message here. But the Bucks took out Uno and Silver. That left Cole all alone in the ring with Alex Reynolds. Reynolds rolled Cole up for a near fall. Ran into super kicks, though, from the Bucks. Panama Sunrise followed that. BTE trigger, and then, of course, the running knee from Cole, which he calls the boom. And the Super Elite pick up the win over the Dark Order. So now the match is over, and here comes Jungle Boy. Here comes Jungle Boy and his spiffy leather jacket. He jumps into the ring, almost tore his fucking leg out jumping over the top rope, but he jumps into the ring and he's attacking the heels, and he ends up grabbing a chair from under the ring. Brandon Cutler tries to spray him with the cold spray, and Jungle Boy holds up the chair as a shield, and then he kicks Cutler in the nuts, and then he whacks him across the back with the chair. He locks on the snare trap while spraying cold spray in Cutler's eyes. First of all, I thought the match was fun. I thought this was a fun match. I like the aggression that we saw here from Jungle Boy. He's usually a little more reserved, a little more timid. He was showing, or trying to anyway, he was trying to show more. It's still hard to take him seriously when he tries to show a lot of aggression, but he'll get there. In time, he'll get there. I like the fact that he was trying to show more aggression here in this segment. We had another segment with Cody Rhodes and Arn Anderson, the continued escapades of Cody and Arn. Arn pulled up outside with Cody Cody was in the passenger seat. And Arn pulled up outside the Nightmare Factory. So Arn Anderson behind the wheel. I hope the cops are out checking for bodies tonight. They're going to be busy filling out paperwork tonight with Arn Anderson hitting the pavement. Dustin Rhodes met them there, and he opened the door to the Nightmare Factory. And when the door lifted open, there were all the students of the Nightmare Factory, all like four or five of them, all lined up. There was Lee Johnson. There was Brock Anderson, or Glock Anderson. Call him whatever name you want to use for him. We had Red Velvet. We had Kylan King. They're all just standing there, and they're staring at Cody, talking about how you're late and how he hasn't shown any respect. Red Velvet seemed to be the angriest of all. And she said that Cody has been acting like an arrogant piece of shit. And she slapped him in the face. That ain't going to sit well with Brandy. That's not going to sit well with Brandy. I mean, these two were tag team partners against Jade and Shaq not that long ago. And now she's calling him an arrogant piece of shit and smacking him in the face. Brandy is not going to be very happy to see what Brandy 2.0 is doing to her husband. So then we cut inside the Nightmare Factory, and Arn is making Cody do drills like he's some fucking rookie who's just getting started here. And he's doing rolls and moves and taking bumps with all the students one by one, one right after the other. And at one point, Kylan King reached into the ring and smacked him in the mouth and Cody was bleeding from the mouth. And then he looks at Arn and he goes, well, what is this? What is the point of this? It's like, that's like me every Monday night when I'm watching Raw. I just stop what I, at some point, I just stop what I'm doing and I go, what is the point of this? What are we doing here? And Arn gets into the ring and he's going to show Cody something on his phone. And he brings up an old photograph on his phone. And from what I could see, it was an old photo of you know, Cody's father in a match, probably against the Horsemen. But in this case, it was Cody and Arn Anderson, or not Cody, but Dusty and Arn Anderson from probably 35 years ago. And Arn says that nobody was booing his dad when he put 30 stitches in his head. And he said that Malachi Black has it coming. That was the message here, right? Nobody, back when Dusty was feuding with Arn and the Horsemen and they were killing each other, they had it coming. Just like Malachi Black has it coming. So focus. Focus on Malachi because he's got revenge coming to him. I thought this was a much better segment than whatever the hell that was a few weeks ago when Arn was setting fires to trash cans outside of Cody's house. So this at least made more sense than that segment did. I like this more than that. Any segment that opens or closes with Arn Anderson behind the wheel of a car, it's okay with me. MJF came out in his gear. He was dressed for combat. We don't see MJF in the ring very often on TV. How many times do we see MJF wrestling on TV? Not very often. But he was coming out to the ring in his gear, and he did this whole ring introduction for himself. Because Justin Roberts, who he said was dressed in his white suit like something out of Miami Vice, wasn't doing a good enough job, so he introduced himself. But he did the introduction as if he was out there for a match against Darby Allin. Of course, Darby Allin was attacked by the Pinnacle. So last week or 2 weeks ago, he was left for dead. And obviously MJF knows that. So he was playing coy, and then he said, oh, that's right, Darby got attacked a few weeks ago. He's not here tonight. So then he said to Wardlow, he wanted Wardlow to come on down to the ring. And Wardlow brought with him Bryce Remsburg. He brought a referee down to the ring. And MJF wanted Bryce to count to 10, and if Darby did not come out for the match, then it would be considered a forfeit. And Bryce began to count when all of a sudden, the snow is falling in Miami. There's been a lot of snow over the years that has fallen in Miami. You get snow all year long in Miami, especially back in the 80s. And here comes Sting. I'm sure Sting did his fair amount of snow back in his day. But here comes the Icon Sting. No Darby, but he comes to the ring with the baseball bat. And he goes to hit MJF with the bat, and MJF threw Wardlow in the way. He made Wardlow take the bullet for him, and Wardlow took the shot instead. And MJF teased that he was going to come back into the ring and go after Sting, and Sting was waiting for him, and then MJF thought better of it, and he bailed. And that was the segment. So they're obviously building to Darby and MJF. They're saving it for Full Gear. I don't know if we're going to get to see Sting in a match against MJF between now and then. Maybe they'll do something Sting against MJF and Wardlow in a handicap match. He's being beaten down 2-on-1. Here comes Darby. Maybe that's how Darby makes his big return. You know, he comes back to save Sting from a handicap beatdown at the hands of MJF and Wardlow. But Darby will be back on TV in the next week or two. And that should set up the pay-per-view match. We had Kiera Hogan 1-on-1 against Penelope Ford. And the great exchange here from this match came from CM Punk, who said, I know it's a little on the nose, but Kiera Hogan, any relation? CM Punk made news last week when he was doing an interview and he called Hulk Hogan a piece of shit. We know what CM Punk thinks of Hulk Hogan. He was a little concerned that there could potentially be, which is actually hilarious when you really stop and think about it. No, there is no relation between those two. But he said, any relation? And Excalibur's response was, to golfer Ben Hogan? No. And then they were rattling off all kinds of Hogans. Hogan's Heroes, Paul Hogan, Crocodile Dundee. No relation. So they had a rough go of it, these two women did. before the commercial break. I thought it got better when they came back from commercial. As soon as they came back from commercial, Hogan was on the top rope delivering a superplex. Hogan never did too many superplexes back in his day, except in those matches with the Big Boss Man when they had those cage matches. Those are some pretty big matches, too. They did big business, those two. That's probably the only time I can remember Hulk Hogan ever hitting a superplex, honestly, was the superplex spot from the top of the cage in the matches that he had with the Boss Man. I don't know that I remember a single time he ever did that move in any other match. But Kiera Hogan hit one of her own here. Penelope Ford came back. She hit a handspring cutter that looked pretty good, and then she applied the Muda Lock for the submission and got the win. Ruby Soho, as soon as the match is over, Ruby Soho immediately runs out and attacks Penelope for what she and the Bunny did to her last night at Rampage with the Brass Knucks. Bunny ran out, saved Penelope Ford. Again, I thought it got better after the commercial. I would not say this was a good match, because it wasn't. It was not a good match. Yeah, there were a couple of nice spots, like the superplex, and even the springboard or handspring cutter didn't look half bad. I would not call this a good match, though. They aired a Miro vignette. We haven't heard from Miro since he lost his TNT title to Tiny Tim, as Dan Lambert would call him. But this was great. So Miro looked like he was in a confessional somewhere, and he's having a conversation with God. He's having a conversation with God here. He goes, "You know, I love my wife, but I can't go home like this." He said, "Why have you forsaken your champion? I'm done pleading with you." He says, "My God, make no mistake, you will make me champion, or you will be next on my list." He said, "Everyone else will know pain until I am your champion again." So this man cut a promo on God. He threatened God here in this promo. Threatening God will not win back his TNT title, but I could appreciate how obsessed he is to get back the championship. It's like, what a concept. Wouldn't this be nice when somebody lost the championship if they actually showed as much of a desire to get that championship back as Miro did here in this segment? So I don't think we see enough of that in wrestling. I think more people should follow Miro's lead when they lose their championship. Seems like nothing else matters to this man except getting back the TNT title. So Hangman Page came down to the ring to be interviewed by Tony Schiavone, who was back in the ring, and almost instantly Hangman took the microphone out of his hand, and Tony just kind of hung out in the corner. Just stood there watching. It is official, though. It will be Hangman against Kenny Omega at Full Gear. This, of course, is coming after Hangman won the casino ladder match on television last week, pulled down the poker chip to earn himself the right to challenge Omega for the championship. And I thought this was a great babyface promo. I cannot praise this promo enough. I thought Edge did a great job on SmackDown last night with his sit-down promo, selling the Hell in a Cell match against Seth Rollins. That was the go-home promo. I don't expect to see him on Raw on Monday. He had a sell job to do for that match, and he did it. And in WWE, Edge is one of the best people they have when it comes to cutting a promo like that with that intensity. I've never seen Hangman Page cut a promo like that. I'm not saying this was like that, but what I'm saying is, as great as that was last night, tonight the honors go to Hangman Page. He talked about the original vision of AEW was to change the world, but it feels more like the world has changed him. He talked about how he failed to become the first ever AEW world champion. He lost to Chris Jericho. He lost to Pac. I believe that was on the very first episode of Dynamite. He lost his confidence. He lost his friends along the way. The only thing that brought him back was people chanting cowboy shit. And so you had a building full of people in Miami chanting cowboy shit. It says cowboy shit to him means a lot of things, including going back home to be there for the birth of his beautiful baby boy. Don't tell that to Tucker. He said that when you fall off, you get back on the horse and you keep riding because that's cowboy shit. Said he doesn't know what the outcome of the match will be at Full Gear, but he knows the people believe in him, and for the first time in his life, he does too. He's got his confidence back. And he promised to give his blood, his sweat, his heart, his soul at Full Gear, probably shed some tears one way or the other. And most of all, he's going to give you cowboy shit. This was great. Simple, but effective. Exactly what needed to be communicated heading into the main event at the pay-per-view. He delivered it with conviction in his voice. He believed every word that he was saying. The crowd hung on to every word. They reacted to him like he was the biggest star in this entire company, which he could be. That man right there that you saw in that promo, that's your next AEW World Champion. Right there. Then we had the American Dragon. Bryan Danielson, fresh off his battle with Minoru Suzuki. A classic, a 20-minute classic last night in this very building, in fact. One-on-one here against Bobby Fish. Now, these two have met before many years ago. They met previously in Ring of Honor. Punk, early in the match, accidentally called him Daniel Bryan. He caught himself, but it was too late. He said, you know what? I'm just going to call him the American Dragon from now on. And then he tried to make Jim Ross feel better about himself by saying, see, it's not just you who makes these mistakes. There was another point where he caught himself when they were talking about the championship. And you could tell he was about to say WWE, but he stopped himself and he said AEW. So through the picture-in-picture break, you could see Bobby Fish had control. He was working over Bryan's knee. They come back from break. It's a sliding lariat that takes out Danielson, but only gets a two count. And he applies a half crab. Bryan fights out of the half crab. He gets an ankle lock and hits a released German suplex with one of Fish's legs trapped behind him. The leg capture. So they exchange kicks. Two dragon screws by the dragon himself. He took Fish's knee. He wrapped it around the ring post three times. Fish came back. He got a backdrop driver with the knee capture, dropped him right on his head. And I will say, you know, we've seen Bryan take some head bumps in a lot of these matches that he has had since coming into AEW. And he's had some great matches. I mean, you look at the matches that he has had so far, the match with Omega, Grand Slam, the match last night with Suzuki, even the match tonight with Bobby Fish, I thought was very good. It's great to see him out there doing his thing and see some of that old American Dragon come out. I do wish, though, he would take, you know, better care of those head bumps. Fish got him on the top rope, hit a gigantic avalanche Falcon Arrow off the top. He got two. Danielson kicked out. Fish, though, got the knee bar, transitioned right into the knee bar. Danielson grabbed a leg of his own. And so these two now start kicking each other. They each have a leg, and they're kicking at each other, and Danielson won that exchange. And then out of nowhere, he locked on a heel hook. And a heel hook is a very painful move. And Bobby Fish had no choice but to tap out. So Bryan Danielson gets the submission win. Tap or snap. Danielson wins. And back-to-back nights, in fact. Right? Suzuki last night, Fish tonight. I thought it was a fun match. I didn't think it was as good as the Suzuki match or the Punk match. You know, either of those matches from last night. It was a step below both those matches, but still, very good main event. Very good main event. So they saved the announcement for the very end of the show of the World Title Eliminator Bracket, which I will now read to you. So these are the first round matches in the tournament, which is going to be kicking off next week on TV. And it's going to be in the first round. Jon Moxley one-on-one against Preston Vance, 10 of the Dark Order. I don't know why he is in this tournament. I would have found somebody else to put in that slot just to give it a bigger name. But maybe they just don't have any other names that they want Jon Moxley to beat, because we all know who's winning this match. It's Moxley against 10. Orange Cassidy one-on-one against Powerhouse Hobbs. That match is going to be taking place on Rampage next Friday. We've got Bryan Danielson one-on-one against Dustin Rhodes. That's going to be on Dynamite next week. As will Eddie Kingston one-on-one against Lance Archer. And as I look at these brackets and I try to map out how this is going to go, Moxley advances. I'm going to say that Hobbs advances over Orange Cassidy. So we get Moxley and Hobbs in the semis. On the other side, Danielson over Dustin, and I would not sleep on that match. You know, even though Dustin is older, he can still go. And I think Dustin against Brian next week could be a very good match. But Brian is going to advance. And then Kingston and Archer is a little bit tougher. It would be fun to see Brian in there with Kingston. I think it's Archer. Give the man at least one win. Lance Archer doesn't win anything in this company. He won the TNT title for like a week. That was about it. Otherwise, he doesn't win shit. At least let him move on to the second round. So I think Archer beats Kingston, meets Brian in the semis, Moxley beats Hobbs in the semis, and yes, we get the predictable finals of John Moxley one-on-one against Brian Danielson. That's going to be your final at Full Gear. That's another big match for them to put on the pay-per-view card. And Brian wins and earns himself the right to then challenge for the championship against Hangman, because I think Hangman should walk into Full Gear as the challenger, and I think he should leave as the champion. I think it would be a big mistake to have Hangman walk in there and fail. After running down his list of failures going back to when the company started, in his promo, he talked about the fact that from the very beginning, he failed. He failed to become the first AEW champion. And he has failed time and time again. For him to walk in there, finally getting the championship match and fail again is not something I think that should be happening. So the tournament doesn't have a ton of star power, but the names that need to be in there are in there, which is Moxley, which is Danielson. That's going to be your final at Full Gear. And so that kicks off on TV this upcoming week. Now, next Friday on Rampage, in addition to everything I just mentioned, we have Pac one-on-one against Andrade Part 2. Britt Baker one-on-one, I believe it's non-title, I believe, against Anna Jay. The men's world title eliminator will kick off. We're going to get the brackets for the women's TBS title tournament that's going to be starting soon. Next Saturday on Dynamite, it is Malakai Black one-on-one against Cody Rhodes, Part 3. Dynamite is again delayed because of the NHL, so it'll be on next Saturday at 8 p.m. I just as a programming note, most likely there will be no Dynamite stream next Saturday. I'll probably just save my review for the podcast the next morning. So as of right now, it could change, but probably no Dynamite review next Saturday. And also, don't forget, episode 726 is dropping tomorrow. Tomorrow afternoon, you got a brand new podcast. You got the Dark Side of the Ring review up on the Luna Vachon episode. You got a lot of content. And I will watch Halloween Kills. I have not seen Halloween Kills yet. I've had people asking me, are you going to review it? Are you going to review it? I will review it. I reviewed the last movie in 2018, so I will review this one as well. But I'm not even watching it until tomorrow night. So, and actually, thank you. DHV corrected me. It was not the TNT title. He won the IWGP US title. That's what it was. When he had that main event against Moxley on TV. So he didn't even win an AEW title. That's even worse. He's still winning championships that belong to other companies. You mean to tell me this man's not going to be able to at least move on from the first round to the second round? You got to throw the guy a bone. You got to let him at least move on to the semifinals. All right, let's take a look at the Twitter poll. See what you guys thought of the show tonight. By a score of 87 up to 12% thumbs down, you guys give the episode tonight an A. So, at Solomonster is where you can always go to vote in these polls. We also have a poll, by the way, going in the live chat here. So, let me see where that's at. That is at 93% thumbs up, 7% thumbs down. So, I think the overall consensus here, as manic as this episode felt tonight, was that this was a very good episode of Dynamite. It did the job that it set out to do. I will not be going back to rewatch anything that we saw on the show tonight. It doesn't have replay value like some of the stuff we saw last night, but it was a good show. It's a good weekend for AEW. Good weekend of shows. Let's take a look at your super chats. I'm going to read what you guys sent me here. Boy, KC in the chat really did not like that Kiara Hogan match. Wow. Gave the show a B+ because that horror of a match brought the grade down for him. So he did not like that match at all. Ulagrim, big fan of Rob Zombie's Halloween. It's not the worst in the franchise. It is not the worst. Groovy Goose, back-to-back nights of Solid Monster, I am here for it. Well, I'm glad you're here, because it would be weird if I was here and you weren't. It would be kind of lame. Ryan Spies, someone check on Tony Khan. Hikaru Shida was on television 3 weeks in a row. Yeah, we don't get to see Shida on TV very often, do we? Or Serena. We need more Serena Deeb on TV also. Angry Magma with the 395. I made it to the stream this time. Here's a random $5 drop. Well, YouTube took their cut. Thank you, Angry Magma, for joining tonight. Joshua Carlos, can you name 5 dream matches in AEW? Also, remember Jabroni Marks? You don't know it's a work when you work a work and work yourself into a shoot. Marks? That's right. It's the 10-year anniversary of that legendary tweet. Yes, indeed. 5 dream matches in AEW. I mean, I don't like doing these list questions. Probably better to email them anyway. But we saw one of them last night. Right? There you go. We got one of the ones I was actually hoping to see. We got it last night on YouTube. But I think as far as dream matches, you could probably take, honestly, Danielson with any number of people, honestly, on that roster that he has never worked with before. You know, the idea of even getting Danielson and Darby. Yeah, you use the word dream. I don't really have a lot of dream matches. I have matches that I think would be really great that I would love to see. And I think him against Darby is one. Him against Pac is another one. Punk and MJF I think would be a lot of fun. This whole concept of dream matches, though. Closest thing is probably the one that we saw last night. And it delivered, too. Delivered in spades. Nick Grasso, Miro versus God at Full Gear. I have a bad feeling they are going to pass on Hangman for Brian. That would be a mistake. Britt Baker against Anna Jay is not a pay-per-view match. It should have been Ruby Soho. Well, I believe Baker and Anna Jay is on TV next week, so it literally is not a pay-per-view match. Unless you believe that it's building to a championship match on the pay-per-view. I don't have an issue with it at all, because they have to pass the time before Britt gets to, or Thunder Rosa gets to Britt Baker. She needs some women to work with. Anna Jay, when she came back all those weeks ago after being gone for so many months, and she ran out to make the save for Ty Conti on that one episode, she got a great reaction. People like Anna Jay. So if they want to use Anna Jay as kind of a stopgap between now and then and get a championship match out of her, I have no problem with that, because she needs people to work with before she gets back to Thunder Rosa. Quintus Brown. Great show tonight. Predictable tournament. Mox against Brian. Joshua Carlos, was wondering if you plan on doing more segments on the podcast similar to RSPW Rewind or This Week in Wrestling History. They are great listens. Yeah, and you can find every single segment, every single This Week in History segment is archived in a playlist on YouTube. For those who don't know, if you ever want to refer back to it, it's all there. All the RSPW Rewinds are on there as well. I am going to be working on more RSPW Rewinds. They will probably continue to be video, so it'll be separate from the podcast. If you mean some kind of new segment that's similar to it, I'm sure I will. I don't have anything planned at the moment, just because I'm focusing just more on the new stuff and trying to do more mailbag questions. We kind of got away from that for a while. I want to dedicate some more time to Q&A. But usually every now and then I'll do like a countdown of some kind. For some topic, it'll either be a countdown or some kind of new feature I come up with. But I don't yet know what that will be. Roach Killer, Chris Savage. Best black mass kick since he's shown up in AEW. Cody against Black 3 scares me. It would be the worst thing they could do if Malakai loses to Cody. I don't want to see it, but I just feel like we got what we needed to get in the second match, and now I feel like we're being a little too greedy if we assume, well, they're going to have Malakai win for the third time. If it's me, he wins. I don't think he's going to win next week. And it's all in how it goes down. It's all in terms of what do they do? How do they book it as far as how is it going to impact Malakai Black? Because he could be just fine. It's not like if he loses, he's buried. It's all in how the match is booked and how the finish is booked. I just find it hard to believe they're going to have Cody lose three times in a row. You know, they're doing the almost like a redemption story with him. Back to basics, basic training, right? Now he's going to show up and lose? He has insisted that he is not going heel. If he is going to go heel, then he absolutely could lose, and that could be the catalyst for a heel turn. But if he's telling the truth and he's not going to lose, or rather he's not going to go heel, I don't see how the babyface doesn't win here. Quintus Brown thinks that FTR needed that win tonight. Well, it's just too bad they were dressed up like Ninja Turtles when it happened. Nick Crispino, will the AEW crowd be happy if Omega beats Hangman at Full Gear and faces Danielson down the road? Well, I'll raise my hand and say, yeah, I'll be happy with it. I would ask the Demon if he would be happy with it, but unfortunately, he's lying dead on the mat there on your screen. So we can't ask him. Horrible fucking finish. Oh my God. Thank you, Nick, though. Joshua Carlos, how would you rank the Michael Myers masks? Oh, the original is still the best. The original Shatner mask is still the best. There was a mask that they used. I want to say it was part 5. That, to me, is one of the worst ones. I actually thought the one they used in the first, was it the first Rob Zombie one, was not terrible. And I like the one they used in the remake from 3 years ago. But nothing beats the original mask. It's just that plain look. It's just unnerving. Groovy Goose. Sting brings new meaning to snowing in Miami. James Borbath. More likely heel turn for Arn or Moxley? Moxley. And in fact, when Moxley loses in the Eliminator, don't be surprised to see a heel turn come out of it. He was already showing signs of that tonight. He's already got that pissed off look on his face. It would not take much, I think, to turn him heel. The only thing about that is that music that he comes out to is not conducive to a heel. So if he goes heel, I think he would have to change the music. Maybe go back to his old music. I loved his old music. I actually liked his AEW music. But I don't see him going heel and keeping Wild Thing because it just doesn't work. It doesn't fit. Buddy Murphy is all New Japan. You confused me there. You like emerged two promotions together into one. I read that as All Japan, and then my eyes had to reset themselves. He is New Japan. And again, as I said earlier, I am very happy for him. Jacob Donnelly, what's going on, Jacob? I hope you're having a good night here on a Saturday night. You're spending it with me. What's wrong with you? Says, I'm going to go with Moxley to win the tournament. I think Moxley could use a heel run now in AEW, and with Hangman most likely winning the title at Full Gear, a heel Moxley against Hangman interests me. Well, if he goes heel, he would have to go heel either in the finals or at some point before then, though. Well, not necessarily, though. I mean, he could win in a competitive match. There would have to be a reason for him to go heel, though. I guess that's my question. What is the reason for him to go heel? If he wins the tournament, he's got his shot, right? So there's got to be a reason. There's got to be something that sends him over the edge. Him going all the way to the finals and losing, to me, is enough to send him over the edge. I don't know what the reason would be, though, if he wins. So that's my hang-up with that idea. Quintus Brown, who's your dark horse in this tournament? If not Brian, then, yeah, Moxley, I think. We were just talking about that with Jacob. I mean, his idea is not a bad one. I think if it's not Brian, it probably would be Mox. I just don't think realistically anybody else really fits. I don't see it being Hobbs. I don't see it being, you know, Orange Cassidy. Preston Vance, I mean, give me a fucking break. Archer, no. I mean, look at the way they've booked him so far. You think he's going to the finals and winning? Give me a break. Kingston, no. Dustin, no. I mean, it really could only be Brian or Moxley. Those are really your only two options there. But I mean, by definition of dark horse, if I had to pick someone other than the obvious, you know, it's so much of it depends on who comes out of that pay-per-view, though, as the champion. You know, whether it's the heel Omega or if it's the babyface Hangman. If it were Omega retaining at Full Gear, then I would say my dark horse in the tournament to challenge Omega would probably be... See, there really is no other good option here because we've already seen Cassidy. there really is no other good wild card option. But Mr. Ozone is convinced that 10 of the Dark Order is going to win. Yeah. I'll shave my head and do a fucking bald podcast here if 10 wins the entire tournament. Revan. It's Raven's evil twin. Revan sent a $10 super chat. Have a rematch of Malakai Black against Dante Martin at Full Gear. Give Malakai his first loss against Martin in front of Martin's home crowd for the huge pop. I would definitely not do that. I'm sure it would be a nice moment for a young Dante, but absolutely not. Bulu Fatulu with the $10 super chat. Salamazo, do you think that Breaking Bad episode, Ozymandias, is the greatest television episode of all time, as many have said? I have argued that, you know, Ozymandias is, I think, the greatest episode of television that I've ever seen. It's hard for me to vote against, well, I think of The Sopranos and I think of The Pine Barrens, I think of Whitecaps. I mean, there were some great fucking episodes of The Sopranos that stand out. But that episode of Breaking Bad has to be, I think, the greatest hour of just dramatic television that I have ever seen. I think the first 15 to 20 minutes of that episode, my heart was just like beating out of my chest. So, for that reason alone, if you have never seen Breaking Bad, because that episode came in like the last season, that's like season 5, you should watch the show anyway. But just to get to that episode, it's worth watching the first 4 seasons of that show. It's an incredible show. BG Thrilla. I missed the show, but I saw the tournament bracket. Please don't turn Mox heel, at least not yet. Maybe next year. Bulu, buy or sell, saddest episode of TV, Breaking Bad. Boy, you love Breaking Bad, huh? Breaking Bad's Celia episode, or Selena episode, or The Shield's family meeting. I am actually in the middle of rewatching The Shield for the first time since I originally watched the show. And I'm on season 3. I just started season 3. So it's like I'm enjoying it all over again. It's just such a great show. I'll go with Family Meeting. Family Meeting is... boy, I gotta say though, you know, it's only season 3. We have another, like, what is it, four seasons left after season 3. And already the show is so fucking depressing because I know what's coming. And... It's just such a depressing show. It's just so dark and depressing, but it's such a great show. Nick Grosso, when I saw the mask guys at first, I thought Andrade called Jim Herd and got the Ding Dongs. Well, how old would the Ding Dongs be right about now, huh? Probably in their 60s, 70s. When you're under a mask, it really doesn't matter. Epsilon Sama, Tony ran to the back on live TV. Watch it again. You saw him run to the back on live TV? Because I didn't see it. He would have been out of breath. Are you kidding me? He would have been huffing and puffing if he had run to the back. It was so quick. You may be right. Maybe those last few seconds of the match, he ducked away. But almost like right up until the finish, he was on commentary. I just don't understand. They have Alex Marvez. They have Dasha. They used to use Alex Abrahantes in that role, you know, when he's not selling laptops on QVC. Why does it always have to be Tony? I mean, I enjoy Tony Schiavone as the roving reporter, but does he really have to be in every single segment? I mean, it's just to the point of comedy at this point. Do they have nobody else who could stand there and hold a microphone and interview somebody in the back? I just don't understand the need for it to constantly be Tony Schiavone. Grant McRoberts, longtime subscriber. Do you think AEW will ever get live TV in the UK? As we only get shown Dynamite on Fridays on ITV4. Love your work. Keep it up. I mean, it's hard for me to sit here and say never. I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime in the near future. And I certainly haven't read or heard anything about that. I mean, they're making all kinds of deals and, you know, a video game coming out next year. And I've not heard anything about the UK television situation with AEW. And this is still a company that's still really in its, you know, in its infancy in many ways. So I think it just may take a while before they get to that. Quintus Brown, maybe Tony Khan should sign Renee to do those backstage interviews instead of Tony Schiavone. You know what? There you go. Renee Young. Renee Young, I think, if she wanted the gig, that would not be a bad role for her. Renee Young doing half the backstage interviews and Tony Schiavone handling the other half. Why not? Dry chicken without flavor. I guess Tony Schiavone has been using that cloning machine tonight. He can use some of that Matt Hardy Broken Universe magic. Yes, he could. Bulu, thank you for the $5, man. Bulu Fatulu is all over the place tonight. He's like, look at this. He's like the Tony Schiavone of the Super Chats. He's all over the place. Bulu again. Who was your favorite character on The Shield? My favorite character on The Shield. Dutch Boy. Probably Dutch. Quintus Brown, they're really doing Rocky 3, the Rocky 3 storyline with Cody. They are. That's what it is. That's why I think he's going to win. Dorenzo, the former DiLorenzo. How's it going, Solo Monster? I have a question about the IWGP World title. What reason did New Japan have to erase the history of the belt? Did they react to the really bad Evil run, or did they think the belt was too prestigious? I think they were just looking to try something different by merging the championships, and so they were looking to just give it a fresh start. I think it was completely asinine. I just didn't see the need for it. And obviously there's a lot of longtime New Japan fans who I remember being very upset when they announced that they were doing that. I was hoping against hope that they would not do this whole title unification nonsense, and then they did it. I didn't agree with it then. I still don't agree with it. I still think it was a mistake for them to do that. But any answer I give you as far as what they were thinking is just a total guess. I don't think they were thinking. Fried chicken, we can all agree here. Miro against God at Full Gear will never happen. EJ Slemp, I would love Magnum TA just one time to accompany Hangman to the ring against MJF, who would be accompanied by Tully. How cool would that be? That would actually be pretty cool. Nick Crispino, they set up Mox against OC in the semifinals with the loss to Wheeler. Good point. That's a good point. That's right. Because Orange Cassidy was in the ring with the doctor, you know, tending to Wheeler when the match was over, and he had that look on his face. I mean, Cassidy always has that same look on his face. He's not really a very expressive person. But you make a great point. That could have been a setup to the eventual Moxley-OC match. I think you're right. Bulu Fatulu. I'm going to start calling you Bulu Shivani. Whose death was sadder, Lem's or Shane's in the Shield? Well, holy spoiler. Holy spoiler alert there. Well, since the cat's out of the bag... Those were tough, man. Those were really, without getting into how they all played out, they were both very sad. I think that the Shane one was more disturbing, but the Lem one made me sadder. If that makes sense. Marcus the Entertainer, people confuse dream matches with fantasy matches. I think that is part of it. Yeah. Boots, thank you for the $2, man. Marcus the Entertainer, I'm picking Ty Conti to face Britt Baker at the pay-per-view. That'd be fine. Just get a baby face in there to kill some time. Until we get to early next year. Bulu, what in your opinion is the Nightmare on Elm Street? I think Bulu has been boozing it up tonight. Some of these questions here. It's funny, too. You know, The Nightmare on Elm Street, it's funny you bring that up. I've seen some of them. I have not seen all of the movies. And I was never really a Freddy guy. I was a Jason guy. I was a Michael guy. I was a Ghostface guy. I never really got into the whole Freddy Krueger stuff. When I watched Jason versus Freddy, I was cheering for Jason. I was totally in Jason's camp. It's my fucking name. I mean, how could I vote against that? Let's see. Dorenzo, did you forget H2O's CGI mask for worse Michael Myers mask? I did, actually. I did. I saw the H2O movie once. I never watched it again. I was not a fan of it. And now that you mention it, that mask was pretty bad. Dry Chicken, the freaks are out at night. Let's all get it out of our system tonight. 1 for Abaddon, 2 for Rosemary, 3 for Sue Young, or 4 for Other as your Halloween wrestling date. Ball's in your court, guys. You heard the men. Skull Dipper, didn't watch Dynamite because I saw the new Halloween movie. Have you seen it, and what were your thoughts? As if I would even tell you. I'm going to do a review on that. I wouldn't even spoil it, even if I watched it. I haven't watched it yet. I'm going to watch it tomorrow night. I'm going to watch it tomorrow night when it gets nice and dark. Turn the lights out. I'm actually finished with all the work I have to do. All I've been doing for days is working. I'm so far behind everything. Emails in my inbox, even going back to like fucking Sunday and Monday. I'm only now catching up, just in time for the podcast tomorrow. I'm just finally catching up with everything that I need to catch up with, emails and everything else. EJ, turning a popular babyface like Moxley heel and keeping Cody as a babyface after the fans turned on him would be something that WWE would do. It is, and I agree that I think Cody going heel is something that would make him far more entertaining to me, but the difference is that in this case, I feel like the decision really is coming from Cody. And if Cody doesn't want to go heel, he's not going to go heel. Whereas in WWE, they would tell you, you've been booked to go heel. Vince wants you to go heel. And there's very little that you could probably do about it. It's not really your decision to make. Whereas here, I get the sense that they would at least have a say in the matter. Unless Tony Khan was absolutely dead set on something, that there would be input from the talent as far as whether or not they actually go through with that and do that. Cassidy Grooms. Where does Nero go from here? I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Drew McIntyre. Dry Chicken. Man, oh man. I confused dry chicken without flavor to Drew McIntyre there. Good Lord. Hey, there's Future Endeavored in the chat. Shout out to Richard. I know he's going through a tough time right now. Actually, I have something queued up for him on the show tomorrow. He's got a GoFundMe that I'm going to be mentioning on the podcast tomorrow. And I would say drop a link now, but the links are disabled in the chat. But we'll get that mentioned on the show tomorrow. It'll be episode 726. I hope he's doing well. Dry chicken, though, added Squid Game to your watch list. I have added it, yes. Squid Game is now on my watch list. I'm a little behind on my television shows, but I will hopefully get to episode one soon, and I will tell you if I like it or not. Wrestle Austin, it's good to have you, brother. It's been dealing with some issues. Hopefully you're doing a little bit better tonight. EJ Slam, didn't AEW used to have Alicia Atoot, Chris Van Vliet, and Jen Decker under contract? Why not bring them back to do interviews or bring in Sean Mooney? I don't believe those were contract deals. I don't believe Chris was under any actual contract. I assume it was the same for the others. Why they weren't brought back, I don't know. That's something you would have to ask AEW or ask the individuals about. I can't answer that. But I thought, you know, when we saw him, I thought Chris, who's great, and I think he would be great at the gig. I thought Chris did a good job that one time they used him. And what I've seen of Alicia in MLW, she seems pretty good. And obviously now she can't because she's with MLW. So I don't think she could even do stuff for AEW. But you'd have to ask them. I don't know. Quintus Brown, Tony should hire you to do the backstage segments. Hey, if Tony wants me to help lighten the load for him, I'm a phone call away. I am open to potential offers. If I could lighten the load a little bit for poor Tony Schiavone, I just feel bad for the guy. Maybe I could save him a few trips to the back. And Quintus also says, how about moving Rampage to 7 p.m. instead of 10 p.m.? Rampage at 7, I don't think is going to work for them. I think they want the show late night, so I think 8 p.m. would be the earliest that they would put it, and they're not, I don't think doing it at 8 is smart at all, because they're going to get annihilated by SmackDown every week. When SmackDown is on Fox and not on FS1, you know, even a bad week on SmackDown, they're still pulling a little under 2 million viewers, so moving Rampage opposite SmackDown would be a fucking disaster for AEW. And I don't think 7 o'clock is a time that TNT would be interested in. If they wanted it at 7 o'clock when they first premiered the show, they would have premiered it at 7 o'clock. There's a reason why they put it on at 10 o'clock. And even though the numbers have fallen, it's still better than whatever they were doing in that slot previously. So, you know, while the numbers have declined, you know, the reality is TNT seems to be very happy to the point where it was supposed to move to TBS, and now it's not. They're keeping Rampage right where it is on TNT. So somebody at TNT is pretty happy. Otherwise, that show would be moving to TBS with Dynamite. Now it's not. So what does that tell you? All right, so we are all caught up on your messages. That was fun. Thank you guys for all the super chat love. Hope I did a decent job of answering your questions. Yeah, you know, Chris, people talking about Chris Van Vliet. First of all, he's got a great YouTube channel. You should all check it out. Shout out to Chris. We finally were able to get together for that interview, and he interviewed me on his channel. Oh, God, was it last year? Or was it earlier this year? I don't even know my years. This whole pandemic has me all fucked up since I've been working from home. But it was many months ago. And we talked for an hour. It was a great interview. Some great insight there. I thought it was just a good back and forth. So if you're new to the channel and you never saw it, if you head over to Chris's channel and type in Solomonster Chris Van Vliet, the interview will come up. Some good stuff in that interview, so you should check it out. We talk about podcasting and, you know, if you're looking to start a podcast, advice on that and my experiences. So a little cheap plug there for that interview. That was a lot of fun to do. All right, it is time. It is now time to be the booker. But of course, first, we have a super chat from our good friend Bulu Shivani, dropping another $5. Did you feel that El Camino was closure enough for Breaking Bad, or that it could have been better? I thought that El Camino was good. I didn't think it was great. And honestly, I've already forgotten a lot of what even happened in El Camino. So that right there tells you how much it really stuck with me. It's hard when you have a show of that quality. You know, it's hard to really match that standard. They didn't match that standard with El Camino. I thought, like I said, it was enjoyable for me, but I don't really have a lot of great things to say about it. So it was just, for me, it was just kind of there. But anyway, let's be the booker here. A little something we do every week. We did this last night. And what was it last night? Was it The Fiend against Kane? Was the WrestleMania main event that we booked last night. So two marquee names, but I like to think we could do a little bit better than that. So that's right, Tuxedo. No whammy, no whammy, no whammy. Big Papa Pump is your hookup. Holler if you hear me. Should we start getting into some Steiner math here? Scott Steiner, one half of the WrestleMania main event, Big Papa Pump. Who will Big Papa Pump be meeting? Is the other half of this main event here? Well, let's see. Scott Steiner, one-on-one against Kofi Kingston. A former WWE champion. Not even Scott Steiner could say that he is a former WWE champion. We have Big Papa Pump one-on-one against Kofi Kingston. What do you think? What do you think? Is that buzzer worthy? I don't know. It'd be kind of an interesting match. Steiner and Kofi. You know, that's not bad. That's not bad. I'm not gonna ring the buzzer. I will not ring the fail horn tonight. That's kind of an interesting match. That is kind of it's a weird chest match. Yeah, I dated a girl like that once. So anyway, there you go. Scott Steiner and Kofi Kingston. Last night it was Kane against Bray Wyatt. Actually, Kane against The Fiend. We've got some news on Bray Wyatt. We'll talk about that on the podcast tomorrow. That is episode 726. I've done 725 of these things for all of you. And tomorrow we'll make it 726. And I'm not even done putting my whole rundown together, so I'm going to be up for a while yet. Thank you for spending your Saturday night with me. I hope you enjoyed the stream. I thought it was a very good episode of Dynamite following a very good episode of Rampage and a Matt Classic on YouTube between Danielson and Suzuki. We even got a couple of good matches on on SmackDown as well. I did have some praise for SmackDown last night, lest I be accused of being biased here, which I will be accused of anyway, because people are out of their minds on social media lately. Talking about mental health issues. I've been seeing it firsthand on Twitter all week long from all the drones on Twitter. This has been a very, very scary week. But anyway, again, if you guys missed it, you guys have 27 minutes or so of my Dark Side of the Ring review on Luna Vachon. Hey, Hassan, good night, bro. Have a good night, my friend. Luna Vachon, the many faces of Luna Vachon. Up now, for your listening pleasure on YouTube. A very good episode, very sad episode. But I thought a very good episode. And as I said, tomorrow, 7:26 will be dropping. And I'm going to be back live with you on Thursday. So the next time that I am live here on YouTube will be Thursday afternoon, probably around 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the afternoon. Crown Jewel, Sweet Saudi Money 6. Enough of this. As soon as Crown Jewel goes off the air, it's got a noon Eastern start. As soon as that pay-per-view is over, bring it on back here. I'll be live with you on YouTube. And then next Friday for Rampage, probably no Dynamite next Saturday. I might not be around. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great rest of your weekend, and please do check out episode 726 tomorrow. Take care, guys.